Welcome back to TRP.
Hi, a warm welcome back to the Ross Lair podcast. Today I'd like to talk about the enigma that was Marlene Dietrich. When people think of Marlene, they think of the suave, sexy actress of the heyday of Hollywood. She first came to prominence in Blue Angel, a Joseph von Sternberg movie filmed in Babelsberg Studios in Potsdam, just outside Berlin. This was the same studio in which the groundbreaking movie Metropolis was created. Marlene was born in 1901 in Berlin. Prior to the success of Blue Angel, she was lured to Hollywood. Paramount wished to market her as their answer to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Swedish-born Greta Garbo.
We know that one director meant a lot to you.
Yes.
Joseph von Sternberg. And would you please tell us about how it all began and how it was working with? How did it begin?
Well, it all began that he came to Germany. He was asked by Emil Jannings to direct the film, The Blue Angel. And he came over there and he looked at all the actresses and he didn't like them. I mean, they did not answer his idea of that particular person. And he went to look at all the shows that were playing in Berlin at the time. And he went to one play where Albers, you know, who played in the film, and Rosa Valetti were playing. And I also happened to be in that particular play, except I had only one sentence.
You remember and the sentence?
That's all I had to say in one sentence, yes. And he saw me there and he asked the company to call me in the morning and he made me come there. And I couldn't understand it. I thought, I know the book, but there is no small part in it at all for a woman. And I couldn't understand why they asked me to come.
You were still a student then?
Yes. And I had a small part in the play, as I told you, but in order to be, to get accustomed to be on the stage, we were sent to play small parts in all sorts of theaters. And so when I came to see him and I said to him, I don't know why you called me because I don't know a small part in this film. And he said, it's the main part. And I got up, I said, oh, that's not for me. I think you're wrong. Well, he said, sit down and you're going to play the part. Well, I didn't think I would ever do that. You know, I never thought I could play this part at all. And he fought the entire UFA of Berlin. Everybody. He fought Jannings, he fought everybody.
What did Jannings say?
Jannings didn't want me at all, no.
But he changed his mind?
No, he never changed his mind.
You had a fight with Jannings in the film,
no,
didn't you?
No. I never fight with anybody. I mean, in the part, you mean? In the role?
Yes,
in the role, yes, that's different. Mm-hmm. But in person, I never fight, no.
What did von Sternberg mean to you? Did he have the ability of getting everything out of you as an actress?
No, I don't know. He just told me what I should do.
All directors do that.
All directors do that, but he was the very first director I had, so naturally I did exactly what he wanted me to do.
With her sultry, exotic looks and her deep, sensuous foreign accent, she became one of the highest paid actresses in Hollywood.
You made six films in America with von Sternberg.
That's right.
Which was the best of these
I
six?
I think Devil is a Woman. I like that best. It was not a success in America, but now everybody considers it a classic. But at that time, it was not a success.
I have a quotation here from one of the many experts who have been analyzing you. And it says, von Sternberg knew how to tap her apparently inexhaustible ability for hard work. Isn't that poetry?
Well,
is it true?
It's true that I work hard, yes. I can work hard. And I worked hard most of my life, yes. And I like to work hard. I don't mind it at all.
At the time, both UFA and Paramount wanted you. Why did Paramount win?
Well, UFA didn't want me.
Well, there was a contract on its way or something.
Nobody was hesitating. There was a contract with an option after the Blue Angel, and they did not pick up the option. They didn't want me.
Did that hurt you?
No. How could it hurt me? Not at all.
The Blue Angel, when you had that success, when did you know about it? The morning after?
I was on the ship going to America. I left Berlin the night of the opening night. And I was on the ship and I got cables. And they said that I had a big success, which I never thought I would have. You know, I wasn't starred in the film, you know that. Well, you don't know that.
You don't know that.
I wasn't starred in the film. It said Emil Jannings in The Blue Angel, and then there came all the names of all the actors, and then I was on the bottom of the list. Now everybody thinks I was starred in the film, but I wasn't.
But I remember it in Stockholm. I saw you on the posters.
On the poster? Well, they did those later, but in the beginning I wasn't ever.
That's what I mean. They must have done them very
later,
soon after.
Later, yes. Mm-hmm. That all was after the success. You see, it's easy. It's very easy to applaud somebody after the success. It's very difficult to know ahead of time.
Sternberg did.
Mr. Van Sternberg, yes.
This, your leaving Berlin on the very same night of your premiere, was that sort of a gesture?
No, it just happened.
It just happened. The boat happened.
You know,
to
the
leave.
Boats didn't leave all the time, and I had accepted to go to America.
Yes.
And I just had to leave. You know, you had to go by train first to the coast and then take the boat.
And now, as a German girl, you were in Hollywood. Give us Hollywood in a nutshell, the way it appeared to you at the time.
Well, I was very young and very dumb, like all young people are. And I didn't really understand it all very well, but I was there and I worked and I did the best I could, but I did not know really Hollywood as people think of Hollywood. I never saw that kind of Hollywood.
Where did you live during the first months?
I had a house, a little house.
From the start?
Mm-hmm. And then, but the first year, I went there alone. I didn't take my child with me because I didn't know if I was going to stay. Because I had a contract that said that if I didn't like America, I could go back after a year. So I didn't take her with me. And then afterwards I decided that I was going to stay there and I brought her over.
Which actors from that period do you remember best?
The actors.
Which actors do you remember?
Which actress?
Actress or
actors.
Actors?
Well.
From the early Hollywood period.
Well, Garbo just had made the first talking picture. Hmm. You see, I was not there during the silent days. I was only there during the talking.
Well, immediately and after they had started.
Yes, she had just made her first talking film. So naturally, you all loved Garbo.
You mentioned Garbo. Of course, talking to Swedish audience, the Swedish audience would like to know, were you competitors?
No. Nobody was ever a competitor.
Is that
not
true?
Not with Garbo, no.
Oh.
No. No, no. She's a unique person, and nobody ever attempted to be a competitor.
Did you know her?
No.
Personally?
No, I did not.
You did meet her?
No.
Never?
No.
I mean, at a ball or something?
No, ball. She didn't go out, and I didn't go out, so how could we meet?
But It is not her film career that has me in awe of her. It was the humanity, courage and strength of the woman that made me sit up and gasp in admiration. By the time the Second World War had started, Dietrich was reaching the heights of her acting career. Marlene had strong political convictions and was appalled by what was happening in Germany. In 1937, she put her entire salary for the movie Night Without Armour, a sum of $450,000, into escrow to help refugees and dissidents flee Nazi Germany.
We shouldn't forget that the Germans have asked you to come back then after this, after those successes. You had offers from Berlin, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yes, and what happened to those?
Well, Hitler was there by that time. And I didn't want to go back.
Really, what were the offers? Could you quote them?
Oh, the offers were wonderful, but I didn't want to. I didn't want to go back while he was there.
In 1939, she renounced her German citizenship and became an American citizen. It was not until 1941 that America entered the war after the attack at Pearl Harbor. Marlene became the first public figure to help sell war bonds. She further supported the war effort by appearing in concert in front of almost 500,000 American troops.
We've seen pictures from those army years. This seemed to be a sort of fantastic
era. Yes, it was
area.
A wonderful time, yes. It was a hard time. It wasn't easy, but it was wonderful.
You were in Africa, you were in Greenland, you were all over.
Yes, I went first to Africa, Sicily, Italy, and then we went into Rome. I went to Anzio. I played in Anzio quite a while, and we were stranded there. We couldn't get into Rome, and then we finally went in. And then I went back to America because I had to get other people to play with me because not everybody wanted to stay out so long. And then I went to Greenland, Iceland. We went over England, went from England to France, and the front was then near Namur, which the Americans used to call Namur, toujours l'amour. And once it was the front, and once it was not the front, and we went backwards and forwards. And then came the Bulge, which you know of. And anyway, it's that particular European war ended, as you know, in May 45. But the Japanese war was still on, so I went back to America. But the war in Japan ended before I could ship over there.
Dort wollen wir uns wiedersehen, bei der Laterne wollen wir stehen, wie einst Lili Marleen, wie einst Lili Marleen. Unsere beiden Schatten sahen wie ein aus, dass wir lieb uns hatten, das sah man gleich daraus. Und alle Leute sollen es sehen, wenn wir bei der Laterne stehen, wie einst Lili Marleen, wie einst Lili Marleen. Deine Schritte kennt sie, deinen schönen Gang, alle Abend brennt sie, doch mich vergaß sie lang. Und sollte mir ein Leid geschehen, wer wird bei der Laterne stehen? Mit dir, Lili Marleen, mit dir, Lily Marleen. Aus dem stillen Raume, aus der Erde Grund, hebt sich wie im Traume dein verliebter Mund. Wenn sich die späten Nebel drehen, wer wird bei der Laterne stehen? Mit dir, Lily Marleen, mit dir, Lily Marleen. Wenn sich die späten wird bei der Laterne stehen, mit dir, Lily Marleen, mit dir, Lily Marleen.
Lily Marleen was originally written as a poem by a young German soldier in the First World War. His name was Hans Liep, and he sent a letter to two of his girlfriends containing the poem, Lily and Marleen. It was published in 1937 as The Song of the Young Century and set to music by Norbert Schulz. Recorded in 1939 by Leil Anderson, it sold a mere 700 copies before fading into oblivion. The German High Command sought to boost the morale of the troops and began playing music from Radio Belgrade on one of their most powerful transmitters. Rommel's troops in North Africa tuned in, as did the British, and it became a favourite with both armies. Due to the song's popularity, the English decided it must have an English version. And it was done so by Tommy Connor and recorded by Anne Shelton. It too became a big hit with the troops.
How did you live? As a soldier?
Yes, we were simple soldiers.
You had no grade?
We had no grade, no. We only had a grade in case of capture.
Uh-huh.
We were captains. And I always thought it was rather silly. We should have been generals, no? Because it was only a matter of money or how they treated you. In case of capture. Naturally, we were all very much afraid of capture. I was very much so.
You were the German-born American citizen.
That's right.
This mm-hmm. thing.
And they would have shaved my head, and I don't know what they would have done to me.
Were you
really? I was more afraid of that than of the bombs or the guns or artillery.
Did they keep it a secret where you were? Of course, they couldn't.
Oh, yes.
They did.
Yes. Yes, but we were up front. And yes. Anybody would have known if they caught us.
During the carpet bombing of Berlin with incendiaries, Marlene continued to boost the morale of the troops with her entertaining. I can only imagine how difficult a time it must have been for her. She had not heard from her mother, who still lived in Berlin, for over a year. She was unaware if she actually had survived, or if the bomber planes she could hear flying towards Berlin would be the planes that would kill her and her immediate family. Nevertheless, she continued stoically supporting the Allied troops and entered Berlin with the American army. Miraculously, her mother had survived the war, but Marlene was horrified by what had happened to her home city of Berlin and was traumatized by what she witnessed in the concentration camp of Bergen-Belsen.
After the war, you went on filming. Was it a new atmosphere? How was it working?
No. In America, there wasn't a new atmosphere at all. They just went back to normal. I did a film called Golden Earrings with Mr. Mitchell Eisen. And then afterwards, I did a film with Mr. Billy Wilder called Foreign Affair.
And then around, say, 57, 58, you took this almost full step from the screen to a stage like this.
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. This must have been a very serious and important decision for you.
No, it wasn't. At that time, it wasn't. It was just demand and supply. They asked me, and I said no first.
Who asked you first?
Las Vegas.
Yes. Yes.
And first I said no, and then they kept on asking me, and finally I weakened. And I did it in Las Vegas, and I loved it from the very first time I did it. But at that time, you know, I didn't sing any serious songs. I was just entertaining everybody and being beautiful, something like that.
Yes, yes. But
I sing serious songs, and I think I have learned a lot in all that time.
A song I love very much, a song by Pete Seeger, Where Have All the Flowers Gone? Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago. Where have all the flowers gone? Young girls picked them, everyone went. Will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Where have all the young girls gone? Long time passing. Where have all the young girls gone? Long time ago. Where have all the young girls gone? Gone to young men, everyone went. Will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Where have all the young men gone? Long time passing. Where have all the young men gone? Long time ago. Where have all the young men gone? Gone to a soldier, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever? Where have all the soldiers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the soldiers gone? Long time ago. Where have all the soldiers gone? Gone to graveyards, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Where have all the graveyards gone? Long time passing. Where have all the graveyards gone? Long time ago. Where have all the graveyards gone? Gone to flower, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Where have all the flowers gone? A long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Young girls picked them, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn?
Which public do you like best?
Well, I tell you what, it's a very funny thing, but the further north you go, the warmer the people get. People always think that the Latins are the south people are warmer. It isn't true at all.
When you come to Kiruna on the Arctic Circle, welcome.
I haven't been there yet.
Yeah.
But I found, for instance, the Scandinavian people very warm, and the Northern England people, naturally the English audiences are the best, but it's not at all true that the further south you go, that the people are more enthusiastic there. I mean, I've been in South America where they scream and yell and all that. Been in Australia, which is a very interesting country. I've played in Adelaide and then Sydney and Melbourne, and I've been in Israel twice now. I've been in Poland twice. I've been in Russia. And I've been in Japan.
Russia, Poland, could you specify what was the reaction there?
Oh, absolutely terrific. They didn't know my films, you know, because they were forbidden in Germany, so they never got them there. But that didn't hinder them at all, because you see, the Russians are very well organized. I mean, they asked me for all the words of the songs many months before I went there. And they translated all the words, and everybody who came into the theater could read the words.
Yes.
Now that took a lot of work, but this way they could understand what I was doing. And the theaters are so beautiful in Russia that, you know, it just breaks your heart. They're so beautiful. The Pushkin Theater in Leningrad, it's just to die. And the trains we traveled in, you know, it's like Anna Karenina, all red plush and girls that bring the tea, and it's just beautiful. And they have such capacity for passion, you know, they love you if they love you.
You love going back there?
Oh yes, I always go back. I always go back to the places I like.
When you come what to about Sweden? Germany? Sorry, what about Germany?
Well, I didn't go back to Germany. I was in Germany once in 1960. But
Were you unhappy with the audience or unhappy?
No, the audiences are wonderful. It's the press that's bad. And, you know, they put bombs in the theater, and who wants to be bombed at this time?
I've noticed many Germans here outside. In
oh,
Tivoli.
No,
they
the German audience
you,
is wonderful. It was just the press that just didn't like me.
The last time Marlene visited Berlin in 1960 on a homecoming tour, her concerts were picketed, and the theaters received bomb threats, and the newspapers called her a traitor. She decided to be buried in Paris after that. But when the wall came down in Berlin and it looked like a new dawn was approaching, she relented, saying she wished to be buried close to her mother. Marlene spent her last days living alone, alcoholic, dependent on painkillers, withdrawn from society, living in Avenue Montaigne, Paris. She died of kidney failure on the 6th of May 1992. On May the 16th, Marlene Dietrich was laid to rest in her hometown of Berlin. The city was heavily divided as to whether they were burying a traitor or a patriot. Security was tight as several thousand Berliners crowded into the leafy cemetery of Stubenrauchstrasse to pay their last respects. Millions more watched the burial on a live television broadcast. Though she had been awarded the highest civilian medals in both France and the USA, she was never quite accepted at home, having, as the Germans saw it, not only abandoned her country, but entertained the troops that had wreaked so much destruction on her homeland. Her grave has been desecrated several times since her interment, but slowly and surely the tide of opinion in Germany is turning in Marlene's favour. I leave you now with Marlene Dietrich singing the English version of Lily Marlene.
Lily
outside the barracks by the corner light. I'll always stand and wait for you at night. We will create a world for two. I'll wait for you the whole night through. For you, Lily Marlene. For you, Lily Marlene. Bugler, tonight, don't play the call to arms. I want another evening with her charms. Then we will say goodbye and part. I'll always keep you in my heart. With me, Lily Marlene. With me, Lily Marlene. Give me a rose to show how much you care. Tie to the stem a lock of golden hair. Surely tomorrow you'll feel blue, but then will come a love that's new. For you, Lily Marlene. For you, Lily Marlene. Marching in the mud and cold, and when my pack seems more than I can hold, my love for you renews my might. I'm warm again, my pack is light. It's you, Lily Marlene. It's you, Lily Marlene. My love for you renews my might. I'm warm again, my pack is light. It's you, Lily Marlene. It's you, Lily.
Keep on listening to TRP.